Thank you, my brother, for what you spoke on a while ago. That's perfect to head in the direction that I want to head. So thank you for making me look better than I really am, right? Thank you. I appreciate that. My name is Steve Kraft, and I have been a pastor for a long time. We're gonna turn this into a workshop. So I'm not going to preach to you. This is going to be a workshop, an informative workshop that I need to learn from you. Let me start by saying yesterday was an interesting day for me. Let me tell you why. About 3 months ago, I was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And I went through this with my church, and there was some evidence that, yes, I have Parkinson's. And Parkinson's is a very difficult thing to diagnose. And so I thought that I would get a second opinion on this, right? That's always a good thing to do. And so I have a friend who works at UT who said, "You are in luck. This doctor is coming from Vanderbilt, and he's setting up practice here at UT. This guy is in all of the national journals. He is a front runner. He is the man. He's awesome. If I can get you in with him, will you go see him?" I'm like, absolutely. I mean, if this guy is this good, I'm thinking, you know, if I can get in and just touch the hem of this guy's garment, right, then I'm going to be healed. And so my application was taken from a stack of 500 patients that wanted to see him because my friend had some pull. And so, I mean, just ramping up to this, I can't wait to see this guy, right? And so my wife and I went to the doctor yesterday after all this long wait to finally get to see this guy. And we're sitting there, and, you know, I have in this idea of who this guy is going to be when he walks in the room. You know, he's going to walk just a little bit above the ground. He's going to have a glowing robe, and, you know, he's going to have a halo around. He's going to say, "Come unto me, son, and I'll heal you," and all that sort of thing. Well, none of that happened. The door opens, and in walks this 35-year-old guy. And it looks to me like he slept in his lab coat. His hair was messed up. His clothes were completely wrinkled. He was fumbling with his computer, and he sat down and said, "Hi." And I thought to myself, really? My first impression was, man, I'm getting old. You know, baseball players are all kids now in the major league, right? You guys know what I'm talking about. And I thought to myself, I waited this long to see this guy. And over the next 45 minutes, he proved to me why he is so great. And he did confirm my diagnosis. But I had no idea that that's what I was going to deal with. Because you know, as I know, that young people are not as smart as us old people. And they don't comb their hair the way that we comb our hair, or don't. And they don't dress like we do. And they're slobs, and they're lazy, and they're all sorts of things that we disparage that younger generation. And I appreciate you mentioning this younger generation. And man, was I wrong. Because that guy was the best of the best. Later that day, I'm sitting in my office, and actually, I left my office, and I was in my car, and I get a phone call. "Preach, this is Gary. My daughter really would like to see you right now." I'm like, okay. His daughter is a 15-year-old girl that for the past 3 weeks has been trying to see me, and she wants to talk to me about being baptized. This is a family that used to go to our church years ago, and they moved away and they've come back. And now this 15-year-old girl wants to be baptized. She wants to talk to you, preacher. I don't know these people at all. They've visited the church once or twice as they've come back. And so I'm like, well, I can meet you at the church in 30 minutes. Yes, she would really like to see you today. We stopped by the church. You weren't there. I said, well, I'll be back in 30 minutes. So in walks this 15-year-old girl with her dad, beautiful young lady. And she sat down, and I said, well, it's nice to meet you, and I'm glad that you're here, and I understand you want to be baptized, and, you know, as pastors, tell me about your salvation experience. And she clearly and succinctly told me she was saved and how important it was that she be baptized. And I'm like, so we go through all this, and I said, okay, I've got to ask you, if I can just stop you for just a little bit, why do you want to be baptized here? Because what she had just told me in her testimony was that she goes up the street to the really cool church. You know the really cool church that has all of the lights and the smoke machines during worship? You know those guys? They're really awesome. And they still fit in the skinny jeans. And they have awesome audio video. I'm okay with some of that. I'm not disparaging that. And I said to her, that's where she had been saved. And I said to her, but honey, why do you want to be baptized here? You know what she said to me? She said, because you guys take it serious here.
Whoa. Yeah.
And I didn't know what to say. She said, at the church where I was saved, it's just all about playing and worshiping. Whoa. So for me, both of those stories say the same thing. I am really encouraged by the generation that's coming after us. They have so much potential. Tom Rainer does a lot of study with millennials, and now Gen Zers is the generation after the millennials. And there are a lot of nuns, but there are certainly a lot of young people, a lot of kids, who are wanting to come back to something that's authentic. Not old-fashioned, authentic. And they want a pastor who will just stand up with them in front of them and be honest with them. Not mean, not, again, not grumpy grandpa, like I call John MacArthur. But just someone authentic. And so, brothers, speaking from my perspective, I'm turning into an old guy. And I am being asked to send young guys into this 21st century. And these young guys that personally I'm dealing with, some are my age, some are younger, it's a different generation that personally I am very hopeful with. But this puts me into a difficult spot because I am of another generation and I am a good bit unlearned in the things that I need to know. So this is why I want to make this a workshop. I want to hear. I see my brother back here that's way younger than me. This brother right here that's younger than me. I listen to my son-in-law, my staff, all of these guys that have this perspective on ministry, and they look at me like, what is wrong with this dinosaur? And I look at them and like, what is wrong with you? There's nothing wrong with either one of us. It's Moses and the next generation. It's us doing the same thing. And so I thought what I would do today, none of this is original with me, except that I can verify that it's true as a pastor. But I also want to hear from our younger brothers and sisters especially, or other pastors who've experienced this. What is the matrix, if you will, on what do we need to do to send missionaries into this 21st century? As a sending pastor now, the pressure is put onto me to get this right because I'm dealing with a man and a woman who are called by God, they say, who are looking to me to be their dad, their supporter, their friend, their counselor sometimes. And if they fail, I fail. That's a lot of pressure, right, pastors? We don't want that. So, being a sending pastor in the 21st century, I've taken these things out of the deputation manual for missionaries. And I think they're valued. This is just a snippet of the first chapter in that book. But this helped me to know what to do with a couple that shows up in my office and says, I think God's calling me into the mission field. Will you be my sending pastor? Now, I'm good with helping everybody, and I'm sure I'll do that. But I've realized over the years that you can't say yes to everybody, nor should you say yes to everybody. And so this is what I want to talk about today. Oswald Chambers says, you'll notice on your notes, obedience to the call of Christ nearly always cost everything to two people, the one who is called and the one who loves that one. And I find that to be true. And I want, please, I want feedback and discussion. We'll open it up now. From the pastoral side, I see things from the pastoral side that missionaries may see differently. Jeff Price, who you know, is a contemporary of mine, and I have supported him even when I pastored back in Ohio. And to be honest with you, and he tells me this, he and I are very blunt with each other, he says that I have too sharp of a knife when it comes to missionaries. That was hard to hear. You're not patient enough with them. You can't view them as you would yourself or a staff person. It's a different thing. They're doing a different thing. They're in a different culture. They have different challenges. They have all that different thing. And so he's taught me a lot about that. But I think that there are some things that we really have to pay attention to here. Song of Solomon 2:15, take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. I want to go over with you five little foxes that can ruin a relationship between a pastor and a sending pastor and a missionary. These are not original with me. I have added some original thought to this, but I also want you to add some thought to it. And let's encourage one another, can we? Because I think that as a pastor, brother, I have a different view on some of these things than you do. You're the guy coming in, right? And so or you're another pastor. So let's help each other for a little bit. Can we do that? So if you want to add comment, just raise your hand and go, I'd like to add comment, or just raise your hand and we'll get to you. So little fox number one, if I'm going to send a guy out, or a lady, if God's calling her to a particular ministry, the first thing that we have to talk about is the call. The call. Tell me about your call. How did you get called? Why did you get called? You guys know the old saying, and I tell guys who think they want to go into the ministry, if you think you can do anything else, do it. I mean, that's really the truth, because if they are satisfied doing something else, then they're not called, right? Because like Jeremiah, we can stop preaching the word of God, but eventually the fire burns in us to the point where we just can't stand it. So that's my first thing. So do you have a desire? Let me hear about your desire. It's okay. 1 Timothy 3:1 says, if a man desires the office of a bishop, he desires a good work. But where does that desire come from? And these are things that you have to be examined. Do you have the ability? 1 Timothy 3:2, a bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach. God would not call you to do something that he did not first enable you to do. In other words, God's not going to call you if you don't have the ability. I'm not one of those guys that thinks, well, I couldn't do anything else, and so I became a pastor. Yeah. Right? You guys probably have heard it as a missionary. Well, you guys just want to be a missionary because you can't hold a regular job. Yeah, right. But are you qualified? I mean, we'll talk about this in a little bit. Does your life measure up to this? You know, is this thing that God's calling you to, are you qualified to do it? Now, I know that God doesn't always call the qualified, but sometimes he qualifies the called. I get that. But generally, we have to say, you know, are we qualified? Am I trained? I always tell guys and gals, listen, if God's called you to do this, then you need to go train for it, right? Has there been confirmation? I like this one really, really well. I think in The Preacher and Preaching, who wrote that, Gibbs or Gibbons or one something like that, will say this. Can other people see what God is doing in your life and how he is leading? Have you ever met someone who says they're called into the ministry and you look at them and go, I don't think so? Because there's no evidence of it. Now, here's what's hard, and please raise your hand at any time here. Here's what's hard. Brother Mark, you're talking a little bit about a situation that you've been placed into. Sometimes in these situations as pastors, we are placed in a no-win decision. That's what I hate about being a pastor. I'm darned if I do and I'm darned if I don't. And I didn't even ask for this, darn it, you know. I'm sitting in my office, you know, doing nothing. And all of a sudden, I've got to make this decision. Right? You guys, I think I hit a nerve there, right? So, is there confirmation? People may see God's call and working in your life before you realize it for yourself. Now, that's the opposite side of that. I can see that God's doing something in a person's life when they don't even know it yet. Isn't that neat? I love that. Talked to an army chaplain on the way over here today who grew up in my church and made his heart right with the Lord, and God called him to ministry. Now he's a big-time army chaplain up in Ohio. So he called me this morning and just started talking about the way that God's moving him. And I had told him a long time ago, he goes, I think you're a prophet, Preach, is what he calls me. So I'm not a prophet nor the son of a prophet. But he said, but a long time ago, you told me you thought that I would stand before kings someday. He said, guess what I'm doing in the military? I'm standing before kings. I said, yeah, I saw that a long time ago. And not that we're prophets, but we can see this in other people's lives. As a pastor, when you're asked to send this missionary, do you see a call of God upon their life? Now, from the missionary side, I can imagine this would be frustrating. Who are they to judge whether or not I'm being called? Right? And you can interject in here at any time. Little Fox number two, your ministry experience. I don't think that any of us need to be put into a position of any kind of service when we're a novice. If you still think that ministry is fun and it's shiny and it's bubbly, you might not be ready. I'm a police chaplain, been one for 20 years, and when I was a young police chaplain, it was exciting to hop in a car with lights and sirens. I really try to avoid that now, right? Because I know what's at the other end of that. And so, you know, there's a saying in the police world, you know, when a call comes out, the rookies all jump in the cars and turn their lights and sirens on and head out there and have a bunch of fun. And the supervisors finish their cup of coffee, start their car, check their watch, organize their car, and drive 30 mile an hour to the event. And when they get there, the supervisor cleans up what the guy with light and sirens did. And so I think as pastors, sometimes in our zeal to put people on the mission field, we send inexperienced people who are destined to fail. And it's all because Tom Rainer in his blog says the damage that nice pastors cause are they're afraid to hurt anybody's feelings, but they cause greater damage. And so we have to make those tough calls that says, you know, and this is hard. I've had to do it. I am not going to be your sending pastor. Not yet. If you can do these things and prove to me, but doesn't that sound... I can imagine what the person hears on the other end. Well, who do you think you are, God? Yes. Yep. See, this is the tough part.
That's right.
No, I'm not God. I'm just saying, I want you to succeed. So that's the tough part. Anybody can raise their hand at any time. If a missionary candidate has not been faithful in local church ministry before their request to be sent out, they should not be considered. Most people, by the time they get to wanting a sending pastor, they've proven that, but not all. Little Fox number three, your family. Is your wife beside you? Does she live up to the characteristics of a deacon's wife? I've met some really nice guys who I thought would be a really good missionary that have crummy wives. And guys, you know as well as I do, we're only as good as our girls, man. At least that's the way it is in Maryville. Right? My wife is a great pastor. I'm the front man. That's really what that amounts to. And so, is your wife beside you? A little bit of my talk this morning with my Army chaplain as he's moving maybe to a new detail is his wife is not a wonderful, wonderful woman. She's a little unsettled right now. What do I do? Well, I think you need to give her time. She's a good woman. But we know this, that the success or failure of your ministry will strongly rest upon your wife if you're married. As a sending pastor, I look at that. I've met some guys really, and I don't mean to be rude or crass or anything, who I really feel bad that they married that gal. I'm only saying what you're thinking. I mean, come on. You guys can just pretend like you didn't hear that. And how do you say to this guy? We spiritualize it. Well, brother, we don't have money in the budget. And then we go to lunch the next day and take a guy on because his house is in order. Number B there, your children. Are your children prepared for what lies ahead? Are they obedient? Missionaries cannot raise their support because their children are unruly. Wow, do I remember a dinner out with a missionary and his two little kids. Wow. Now listen, I've got grandsons and they can be terrors. But you can tell when children are disciplined. They'll always misbehave, right? They're boys, or at least mine are. They'll always get ketchup on their back. I don't know how kids do that. How do you get ketchup on your back? I mean, throw fries up? I don't get that. But I clearly remember taking this missionary couple out, and my decision was based on these kids are so unruly, and the parents aren't doing a thing about it. And I'm like, man, I just don't have money in my budget. That's code word, guys. I'm teaching you. You missionaries, that's code word. I just don't have money in my budget. Well, if they took you out to lunch, they probably did have money in their budget. Unless they told you up front. Okay, so your family. A pastor is judged by that, right? And so you missionaries are the same. It doesn't mean our kids are perfect, but Lord mercy. We would all be disqualified for sure. Any comments on that? Pastors, help me out here. Missionaries, how do you feel about this?
I'll make a comment.
Yeah.
Our last missionary we took on, we would not have taken on had it not been for his wife.
Yes, I believe that.
We were that impressed with her.
Yes.
That we took him on.
Yes. I would agree with that. Yeah. Yeah, amen. Good, thank you. Anybody else? John, am I making any sense here? I know you've been through this, right? All right. Little Fox number four, your attitude. The first question is a stunning one. Are you prejudiced? You would think that a missionary who's being called to another land, dealing with different cultures, maybe different colored skin people, different values, that they would not be prejudiced. It's amazing how many are. And the prejudice shows up, example A, what is your response when you check into a motel that is run by people from India? Yeah. And I'm just going to, we all think we're not prejudiced. We all are, to some degree. And we're prejudiced based on race, religion, age. What I tell my young guys on my staff is like, look, when you make fun of or sing an old hymn a funny way joking, what the old people hear is disrespect. And has your staff ever done something that you just want to laugh but you can't? My guys are so funny, but I'm like, if I laugh out loud, half my church is going to hate me. But it was funny. So Are you prejudiced? How will you feel when you are the one who speaks the wrong language? You're the one that dresses funny. You're the one that eats weird food, and you're the one that's the wrong color. Do you come from a family that is prejudiced? I would encourage a missionary to think about that, because we pick up the prejudices of our forefathers without even knowing it. And man, this can even be, you know, I pastored in Ohio for a long time. I've been down here in Tennessee. It can be as subtle as Ohio and Tennessee. Let me give you an example. When I pastored in Ohio, Southwest Ohio, Cincinnati, metropolitan, big city, the whole thing. When I told my people that God was calling me to Eastern Tennessee, you know what they thought? They thought I was going to be some backwoods hick preaching to some uneducated people. True. And here's how I found this out. When they would come down to visit me, they'd say, I had no idea that it was so modern here. Yeah, I use the bathroom indoors. That's a prejudice. See what I mean? So we have to really be careful with that. People in the South are hillbillies. People in the North are snobs. That's a prejudice. Now, can you ask yourself that question? A major prejudice that's going on in the American church right now is an age prejudice. Major. And it shows up in the worship set. It shows up in the version issue. It shows up in the whether I wear a tie or not issue. It shows up in a tattoo issue. I wish it was easy to be a pastor nowadays. Number five, are you going to allow your children to hang around with the national children? I know guys that won't. And it comes out like, and again, this is where I would love to hear from a missionary. They send their kids to an American missionary school, and I know that a lot of that's a safety issue. I get that. But how does that come across? And I'd love to hear this, because I need to learn these things. Any comments from my Egypt brother? Is this an issue? Right.
They do hang out with that.
Yeah. That's kind of the way it just has to be, isn't it? Yeah. Is that hard? Yeah. It would be for me too. Is that a prejudice, or is that just a safety concern? Not
not so much a safety concern, it's more of an influence.
Yeah.
That influence.
Yeah. I can see that. No easy answer there. B, are you teachable? This is a big one. What is your response when someone tells you what to do? Are you willing to listen, to change, to grow? Can someone teach you how to preach? Now, I'm just going to say this right now. The biggest group that you can't tell them anything is a pastor. We are hard-headed and stubborn, and our way is the right way, and no one can tell us any different. So we have to really be careful about that. Are you the type of person who already knows everything and be taught nothing? Many missionaries fail on the field because they want to do their things their way, and it is the wrong way. Are you teachable? Going back to the prejudice thing, here's the thing. I feel bad for missionaries here, for real. I want to hear from you guys. Does a Sunday look like, is your main concern when you go into a church on a Sunday, how should I dress? Can my wife wear slacks? What kind of version should I preach out of? Some guys are turned down because they have facial hair. And I'm like, really? Is this what we're doing? How are we going to launch guys in the 21st century if we have those kind of standards? Yes, brother, you any of these problems? Are you a missionary, right? Have you, where are you in this program? Are you still doing deputation?
I'm on the field.
You're on the field, yeah. So talk to me a little bit. Our pastors, knuckleheads, go ahead and say it.
A few are.
Yeah.
A few are.
Yeah.
Man.
No. Did you run into that?
There's a few that are.
Yeah.
I tried to, when I got the perception on those phone calls that anything like that would be an issue, I didn't call those guys back.
Yeah. I don't know that I like that. I wish that wasn't the case, because that makes your job harder. But I
that many, though.
Yeah, yeah. But I reckon that I'd rather know that up front than get out on the field and the guy figure out that I'm growing a beard and he drops my support, right?
We've got one of our missionaries that we support. He has two different credit cards.
No way. No way.
That's true.
Really?
Missionaries in Honduras.
How about that? That's awesome. That's the Lord must be so pleased. The Lord must be so pleased. Where we've turned this, I hope I'm going to say what you're thinking. We've turned this into I have to please the pastor. Man, oh man, that's the arrogance of a pastor right there. Gosh. I do have a bias against pastors, and I am one, because we hold our missionaries to standards we don't live to ourselves. You guys, you may not. You're here. You're wonderful bio, guys. I know the fellowship does. Whoops. I grew up in that, so I know. All right, so anyway. Enough beating up on those guys. They beat up on each other just fine. Number C, are you humble? Now, this would be hard for me personally. Are you ready to be turned down by pastors when you want to book meetings? Guys, how many does it take to get a booking? How many calls? Have you charted that at all? 100? Yeah. Yeah. Really? How many did it take for you to get support? How many needed to support you? You visited 300. How many supported you?
About
60. It's 20%. Yeah. Should have shaved. You should have shaved. You would have gotten 70%. You certainly have a lovely wife, so that was not the issue. Amen, brother. Yeah, that's what it was. Oh, so you're the one you supported because of the wife. You're the one. Okay. Okay. Well, amen. Are you ready to sleep in converted Sunday school classrooms? Can you travel 6 hours one way, pay for your own food and lodging, spend hundreds of dollars, keep a right spirit when you get a $50 love offering?
Right.
Now, you know, for me, pastor side, I'm always going to take care of you, but I think in the big scheme, God uses those things to teach us humility.
Yes.
Now, I don't think that I need to assist God in that. Here, let me help God make you humble. But the reality is all of us are treated that way by our own congregations, right? I remember a pastor that my dad was saved under, A.V. Henderson in Calvary, Indiana. And A.V. was talking about a family in his church who had bought, I'll get the story close, had bought he and his wife some living room furniture. Now you guys know as pastors, when you take a gift like that, you better have some backup furniture. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Don't throw away your old set, put it in the garage for when that family gets mad at you and wants your furniture back. And that's exactly what happened. Left the church, they repoed their furniture and said, thank you very much. The Lord teaches us how to be humble on those things, right? All right. Isn't it good to serve the Lord? It really is. D, an attitude of gratitude. It's been said that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you respond to it. You cannot control what others say about you, but you can control what you say about others. And then little fox number five, and I'm going to wrap up in 4 minutes here. My 40 minutes are up. Your personal life. Are you a self-feeder? What's going to happen when you're on the field and you're the pastor? That's a good pastor thing. Man, it's different listening to a brother preach and having to do the preaching. Do you have to be fed, or are you a self-feeder? Do you pray? I love this scripture where David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. Can you encourage yourself when no one else will? That's important, right? Are you a self-starter? You've worked for a boss all your life. Now you come to the point where you're the boss. What are you going to do? Who's going to motivate you? Who's going to set your schedule? Ministers in general can be very undisciplined with a schedule. There's no one to hold them accountable. And so discipline in your life will be mandatory. C is a tough one. Are you self-aware? Are you grossly overweight? Do you know how you present yourself? Now, these are things that nobody likes to talk about. But if I'm a sending pastor, and I've got a couple that, for lack of a better word, are slobs, they love the Lord. They got a good heart, right? That's how we give everybody. That's the trump card. They love the Lord, brother, and they've got a good heart. But if they go into that church looking like that, no one's going to support them. I'm only saying what you're thinking, right? Well, but man looks on the outward appearance and God looks upon the heart. They will say, yes, and you're asking man for support. And guess what? He's looking at the outward appearance. See what I mean? So, and I think pastors need to be self-aware. I think our message is, the power of our message is lessened or believed less. It seems less credible when it looks like we're out of control of our own lives. So you need to understand physical appearance is important. Your breath doesn't need to stink. You should use floss. No one wants to see that you had a grilled cheese for lunch. We've all been there. This is a big one for me. Do you keep the inside of your car cleaned out? Hey, pastor, let me take you out to lunch. And I jump in. 92 pop cans fall out. There's a dirty diaper in the back seat. You know, I'm not a very spiritual man. You're probably not going to get my support. Because my guess is your home looks like that. And my guess is your church will look like that. Okay, is that fair? I don't know. Are you living a clean life? We're in a day and age where the ease and availability of sin is literally at our fingertips. You can look at it right here, even while I'm preaching. One day you're going to be in a place where you can do, watch, be whatever you want to without anybody else knowing. What are you going to do? Those are just things to consider. Well, again, God bless you missionaries and you pastors as we have the hard task as a pastor. I want the missionary to understand the difficulty it is to put a seal of approval on a guy or a gal. It's tough. Don't have to be perfect. Because we are placed into a situation where we want to say yes. Please give us every chance to say yes. And if we can't say yes, then we're the bad guy. I respect your side of it as missionaries because you guys have to deal with pastors who are undisciplined themselves and will not call you back. Or will not give you the time of day because they're busy. So are you, right? So let's be gracious to each other. We'll send, you go. We'll cheer until we can't cheer anymore. Amen? All right, love you guys. God bless you.